All rise. The United States District Court for the Northern Mariana Islands is now open and ready for a transaction of business. The Honorable Ramona B. Manglonia, Chief Judge, presiding.
All right. Good morning, everyone. Please be seated.
Good morning, Your Honor.
If Your Honor, please, this is criminal case number 24-00014, United States of America versus Julian Paul Assange. Coming up for an initial appearance. Will counsel please state your appearance?
Good morning, Your Honor. Sean Anderson for the United States.
Good morning, Your Honor. Matthew McKenzie for the United States.
All right. Good morning, Mr. Anderson and Mr. McKenzie.
Good morning, Your Honor. Barry Pollack on behalf of Mr. Assange. Also with me at counsel's table is the defendant and local counsel. Introduce himself.
Richard Miller on behalf of Mr. Assange.
All right. Good morning, Mr. Pollack and Mr. Miller and Mr. Assange.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And then from probation.
Good morning, Your Honor. Officer Juanette David Athelik for pretrial services and probation.
Good morning, Officer David Athelik. All right, so the clerk indicated that the matter is here for initial appearance. I just concluded a meeting in chambers with counsel for both sides as well as the defendant to address some preliminary matters. I take it the government has produced, made the amendment and tendered it to the defense, or is that something that will be forthcoming?
Your Honor, we're awaiting that. I believe it should be up within the next five minutes or so.
Well, we've got other things to address, so we will be able to continue or proceed, and then at the appropriate time, we can have that confirmed on the record. All right, so again, welcome to counsel. We do have a packed courtroom, so I want to make sure everyone is clear with the rules. Let me address the public order that I issued yesterday, which is the order. Bless you. Mr. Benson, the order regarding media access issued yesterday, June 26, 2024. It was published on this court's website to give notice not only to the parties but to the media at large. And I understand the courtroom deputy gave notice before I took the bench, which is in regards to Rule 53 of the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure prohibiting the broadcasting of any part of these criminal proceedings, criminal judicial proceedings from the courtroom. So everyone present in the courtroom is expected to comply. Violators will be held accountable. Secondly, I want to note that based on the international interest in this matter, because I cannot have anything published or broadcast live, the clerk's office has a limited capacity to produce multiple copies of any of the audio recording in this proceeding. For that reason, I am ordering that the recording of this hearing, once certified as the official record of the proceeding, will be docketed. And so ordering, that means once it's docketed, it will be available on PACER. So if anybody has access to PACER, that's how you will have public access to these recordings. With that said, let me also note Mr. McKenzie has already been sworn in for this district as required under local rules, as well as Mr. Pollack as appearing pro act DJ in this matter. The first matter I'd like to address, turning to the government, is the issue of jurisdiction and venue. That's something that every court, whether criminal or civil, needs to address. Every federal district court has jurisdiction over the subject matter of this case because district courts of the United States shall have original jurisdiction of all offenses against the laws of the United States. That's found at 18 U.S.C. Section 3231. This district court, the District for the Northern Mariana Island, is the 94th district in the country. It is the smallest, youngest, and furthest from our nation's capital. So I'm satisfied that I do have jurisdiction to preside over this case. As to the question of venue, a criminal defendant has a constitutional right to be tried in the jurisdiction where the crime was committed. This is a constitutional venue right. The question I have for the government is what is the basis for this district court to have venue? In other words, why is this case filed here in Saipan? Mr. McKenzie, would you like to respond?
Yes, Your Honor. Matthew McKenzie for the government. Your Honor, after months and years of discussion with the counsel, we have decided or requested to bring this case to Saipan, one, because it is close to the defendant's native Australia, and will accommodate him traveling home shortly after this proceeding, and also because he is being first voir dire and is also agreeing to venue, this is an appropriate venue for this proceeding.
I'll highlight the last point you made, which is this is the first U.S. jurisdiction that Mr. Assange has been first brought into the United States. Not many people recognize that we are part of the United States, but that is true. So that would confer venue to this district court. I understand also, as I pointed out, that there could be a waiver, even if this court did not have jurisdiction. And I've already received and reviewed not only the letter of request that you signed off, Mr. McKenzie, on behalf of the Department of Justice and the plaintiff of the United States, but also in the written plea agreement regarding the waiver. So, Mr. Pollack, that is, in fact, your client's intention this morning?
Yes, Your Honor. We concur that there is venue in this district because the offense occurred entirely abroad, and this is the first district in which he has appeared. But for the avoidance of any doubt, we would waive venue to the extent that the court finds otherwise.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Paul. So having satisfied the issue of jurisdiction and venue, I'd like to turn to another preliminary question. That is a matter that all criminal cases are subject to question to, which is in regards to any potential victim of the offense. Under the Crime Victims Act, any victim of the offense has a right to notice of any public court proceeding involving the crime of the accused and to attend that proceeding. Is there any individual victim in this case that would be so required to be noticed? Mr. McKenzie, on behalf of the government.
Your Honor, as we've stipulated to in the agreement, there are no individual victims that qualify pursuant to that act.
All right, so hearing that there is no individual victim, then that preliminary matter of notice is not applicable. Let me then turn to the substance of the case. The matter is here because there is a criminal information was filed with the court just yesterday, June 25th, 2024. Because there is a right to an indictment, I'm going to have to address this issue of any waiver. Mr. Pollack, is your client, Mr. Assange, in fact, prepared to go forward with the waiver pursuant to the plea agreement? When I'm saying waiver, at this point, is the waiver and the indictment before we proceed on the initial appearance on the information?
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Assange is willing to waive indictment and has executed a form to that effect.
All right. On that basis, let me first then address this matter. I will need to address the defendant personally. For that reason, I'm going to ask that the clerk administer the oath to the defendant, Mr. Julian Paul Assange. Sir, please rise to be sworn in by the clerk.
Please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear that the testimony you're about to give in the case now before the court will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Please be seated. If you would please say and then spell your name for the record.
My name is Julian Paul Assange. Assange is spelled A-S-S-A-N-G-E. Julian is spelled with an A.
As a J-U-L-I-A-N?
Yes.
All right. So, Mr. Assange, do you understand that you are currently under oath? And that means you have promised to tell the truth to any questions posed to you. Do you understand that?
I do.
And that if you knowingly make any false statements to any questions posed to you, either by myself or any of the attorneys in this proceeding, then those words could be used against you for a separate crime called perjury. Do you understand that?
I do.
All right. With that understanding, I need to make sure that you are going to, in fact, knowingly, voluntarily, intelligently waive your rights. And so I need to ask some preliminary questions. Sir, how old are you today?
I am 52.
And how far or how high in school did you go?
I studied at university, but I didn't formally graduate from high school.
Okay. Even without any formal, degrees then, what type of employment have you had?
I've been a consultant, a journalist, a computer programmer, editor, author, documentary maker.
Okay, so producer, did you say?
Producer, yes.
Okay. And clear, you are able to speak English. Are you a citizen of the United States, sir?
No, I am not.
What country are you a citizen of?
Australia.
I will address that point later on for another matter. Are you currently or have you recently been under the care of a physician or psychiatrist or hospitalized or treated for any type of narcotic addiction?
No.
Have you taken any drugs, medicine, pills, or drunk any alcoholic beverage in the past 24 hours that may impair your ability to hear and understand the proceedings?
No.
And I do see Mr. Pollack and Mr. Miller are here as your attorney. So I just wanted to touch on this point because you do have a constitutional right to be represented by an attorney, and if you could not afford one, the court would have appointed one for you. I see that you've exercised your Sixth Amendment right to your own counsel of choice. Let me now talk about this charge. Have you, in fact, received a copy of the criminal information that was filed with this court yesterday in criminal action 24-00014?
I have received a version of it, yes.
Okay. In fact, for the record, when the court received it, there was a digitally signed copy by the U.S. Attorney for our district here, the NMI, dated yesterday, June 25th. But I understand Mr. Anderson, who's present in the courtroom, was able to provide a wet signature, basically, that was received over the counter. So that would also, is that correct, Mr. Anderson?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So in any event, the language has not changed, but I want to make sure that the criminal information that you have and that we're proceeding on is the same. So I see Mr. Pollack is nodding his head, and I take it, Mr. Pollack, as counsel, you can confirm that your client, Mr. Assange, has received a copy of this information.
Yes, it's been represented to us that the one with the wet signature is identical to the one with the electronic signature we received previously, and we certainly accept that representation.
Okay. All right, so in this case, the information does charge you with one count, which is a violation of Title 18 of the United States Code, Section 793G. The offense is conspiracy to obtain and disclose national defense information. This is a crime that's punishable up to 10 years imprisonment. Therefore, it is what we call a felony, an offense that's punishable by more than 1 year imprisonment. Do you understand that, Mr. Assange?
I do.
For that reason, you do have a constitutional right to be charged by an indictment of a grand jury, but you can waive that right and consent to being charged by information by the U.S. Attorney of our district. And instead of an indictment, this particular felony charge against you has in fact been brought by the U.S. Attorney by his finding of this information that we've just discussed. So unless you waive this right to an indictment, you may not be charged with a felony unless a grand jury in fact finds by return of an indictment that there is probable cause to believe that a crime has been committed and that it was you who committed that crime. If you do not waive that right to an indictment, the government may present the case to the grand jury and ask the grand jury to indict you. The grand jury is composed of at least 16 and not more than 23 persons, and at least 12 grand jurors must find that there is probable cause to believe that you committed the crime with which you are charged before you may be indicted. Here's the big point of a grand jury, which is the grand jury might or might not indict you. Do you understand that, sir?
I do.
If you waive your right to an indictment by the grand jury, the case will in fact proceed against you on the U.S. Attorney's information, just as though you had been indicted by the grand jury. Do you understand?
I do.
Mr. Assange, have you in fact discussed waiving your right to an indictment by the grand jury with your, is it attorneys, Mr. Pollack, as well as Mr. Miller, or primarily Mr. Pollack? Okay. And do you understand your right to an indictment by the grand jury, as I've just explained to you?
Yes.
Have any threats or promises been made to induce you to waive your right to an indictment?
No.
Do you at this time wish to waive your right to an indictment by a grand jury?
Yes.
I have in my hand a printout for this matter, United States of America versus Julian Paul Assange, waiver of an indictment. This apparently was executed in my presence, but I need to put it on the record because, as I stated, we just had an in-chambers meeting. But in this document, it expressly notes that you understand you've been accused of one or more offense punishable by imprisonment for more than 1 year. You've been advised in open court of your rights, and this is why I'm putting it on the record now. I am advising you of those rights and the nature of the proposed charge against you. After receiving this advice, you actually waive your right to prosecution by indictment and consent to prosecution by information. I do see a signature above the line for defendant's signature. Is this your signature, sir? I mean, you
might have signed such document, yes.
I guess I can have. Well, what I'll do is once I sign off on this, it will be e-filed, and so everybody will have the electronic copy. There's also a signature of defendant's attorney, Mr. Pollack. Is this your signature as presented to me?
It is, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right. And the printed name of defendant's attorney is so stated as Barry J. Pollack. All right. Given the advisement in open court of the defendant's right to an indictment, waiver to an indictment, and the waiver here made in open court, I'm at this time going to accept defendant's waiver. I will so sign off on this. Now that the defendant has waived his right to an indictment, we can actually proceed to the initial appearance on the information and likely go straight into the arraignment on the information. Getting quite quickly. So for purposes of the initial appearance in any criminal case of Mr. Assange, in this instance, the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure requires that you be noticed as to the former charge, in this case the information, your right to retain counsel, and we've already discussed that because you in fact elected to hire your own private counsel through Mr. Pollack and Mr. Miller, and that there's an issue for most circumstances where a defendant is able to secure pretrial release, given the understanding that will be basically mooted at the end of all the proceedings today. But you do have a right not to make a statement, and any statement you make may be used against you here in court. Do you understand that right to remain silent, basically, Mr. Assange?
I do.
And in this case, well, you were never placed under arrest since your arrival in Saipan, is that correct?
That's correct.
So therefore, there's no need to notify your consular officer, but I believe there are some consulate officials in the courtroom on your behalf. I see some nodding of heads, so even though you don't need to be noticed, that is a right to individuals who have in fact been arrested. Doesn't apply, but apparently you're fortunate to have that notice and support. And we've talked about the Crime Victims' Rights Act. All right, so those are the initial rights that need to be accorded for initial appearance on the information. At this time, are the parties in fact ready to go forward with the arraignment on the information? Mr. McKenzie and Mr. Anderson?
Yes, Your Honor.
And Mr. Pollack?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, so for purposes of the arraignment, a defendant is not called to plead unless there's an information or an indictment. In this case, you've already waived your right to an indictment. Mr. Assange, are you in fact prepared to enter a plea of guilty or not guilty to the information? And before doing so, I can ask counsel if you wish that I formally read the charge against you for this one count and advise you of all your constitutional rights. So for purpose of waiver first.
Your Honor, we would waive the formal reading.
All right, so there's a waiver. And at this point then, can we, then is there going to be a plea to this information, Mr. Assange?
Yes.
At this point, for purposes of the charge, the sole count in count one, are you in fact prepared to enter a plea of guilty or not guilty? What is your decision?
Guilty to the information.
All right. In fact, before I accept your guilty plea to the information, I will first like to go forward with the notice of all the rights. So please be seated, and I'll go through that portion. It's usually for, I guess, most people who understand things, not every case goes this fast. After the arraignment, the court will set the matter for trial no sooner than 30 days from today, no later than 70 days from today, called under the Speedy Trial Act. However, because you are in fact prepared to go forward to enter a plea, and I understand that to be pursuant to the plea agreement, not just an open plea, I need to make sure that you in fact for the record, understand all the necessary information. So with that, let me first talk about the offense charged in the information, the possible liability, and then that is when I will need some other matters addressed. So first, as to the charge in the information, I've already indicated it is punishable up to 10 years imprisonment. And as to a fine, it is no more than $250,000 or both, a fine and 10 years imprisonment. There is a special assessment fee of $100 that is due no later than the time of sentencing. Once there's a conviction and a sentence is imposed, the court may impose a supervised release of not more than 3 years. That means after any sentence is pronounced, you may still be subject to additional prison term, and then there's a violation of a condition of supervised release. If there's probation, it'll be not less than 1 year and no more than 5 years for a felony. So this is all because the offense that you're here to enter a guilty plea to is what we call a Class C felony. Do you understand that, sir? It's a lot of information, but...
Yes.
And I'll pause. To the extent that you have any questions and you wish to consult with your counsel, you're welcome to do so. You're also welcome to ask me to have me clarify or, shall we say, slow things down. Okay?
Yes.
All right. So in regards to this criminal information, again, this is a conspiracy. And according to the plea agreement, that is a condition of your plea, there is also a provision at paragraph 22 that needs to be satisfied. In particular, paragraph 22, I don't have a page number there, requires, I believe, that you provide some evidence regarding return or destruction of information. And so, because we are going forward with this process, you are required to take action within your control to cause a return to the United States or the destruction of any such unpublished information in your possession, control, or custody of, or that of WikiLeaks or any affiliate of WikiLeaks. To the extent that you have this obligation, it also requires you to instruct the editors of WikiLeaks to destroy such information or otherwise cause it to be destroyed. And you are to provide the United States with a sworn affidavit confirming the instruction that you have in fact provided. Are you prepared to provide that proof before we proceed for the guilty plea?
Yes.
All right, so Mr. McKenzie?
Your Honor, the government is in receipt of his sworn affidavit and is satisfied that he has satisfied the terms of paragraph 22.
All right. So, given the representation by the defendant that he has performed and the government that the defendant has, in fact, provided that requirement, we will continue. All right. I'd like to then proceed with what we call the, again, it's moving quite quickly, but it's the change of plea notice and proceedings and all the prior responses are in fact incorporated at this stage. The question I turn to focus on the information pending against you, Mr. Assange, is that you've already confirmed having received this document. My question is, have you fully discussed the charge that's pending and the case in general, not just the information, but the case in general with your attorney, Mr. Pollack, in this matter?
I have.
Are you fully satisfied with the counsel representation and advice given to you in this case by your attorney, Mr. Pollack?
It might depend on the outcome of the hearing, but otherwise, I am.
You pause, and I don't blame you for that. So, so far, so good. So, we understand that.
No pressure here, Your Honor.
Understood. All right, so let's then turn to the written plea agreement. This is where I go back to the government as to page 2 of the written plea agreement, paragraph 1. We had some discussion.
Yes, Your Honor. We've had a bit of a technical difficulty changing, getting a revision to paragraph one of the plea agreement. I now have an appropriate PDF version of it that we are printing and bringing here. I don't know if it would be best to pause and bring that here or if you want to proceed, but it's en route.
Okay, so the hard copy is en route, but can you at least read the language that you're proposing to be amended into the record, and let's see if this is something that is acceptable to the parties, which
yes,
is the defendant.
Your Honor.
Okay. So we're focusing on paragraph one of the plea agreement regarding the guilty plea and the maximum statutory penalties.
Yes, I will read the entire paragraph and then note where the new language begins.
Okay.
So paragraph one, guilty plea and maximum statutory penalties. The defendant, Julian Paul Assange, agrees to waive indictment by a grand jury in this district and agrees to plead guilty to an information charging the defendant with conspiracy to obtain documents, writings, and notes connected with the national defense and willfully communicate documents related to the national defense, flagging that I'm inserting new language, from a person having both lawful and unauthorized possession of same, that is the end of the new language, in violation of 18 U.S.C. section 793G. The defendant understands that this is a felony which carries a maximum penalty of not more than a 10-year term of imprisonment, a fine not to exceed $250,000, not more than a 3-year term of supervised release, restitution, and a $100 special penalty assessment.
All right, thank you, Mr. McKenzie. Mr. Pollack and Mr. Assange, you just heard what the amendment is. Is there any objection to this amendment to the written plea agreement?
No, Your Honor, it's satisfactory to the defense.
All right, and that would make it consistent with the language in the information. And then, to be clear, although the information charges you, Mr. Assange, of one count of conspiracy, there are three different legal theories to accomplish that. In particular, as stated in paragraph 6 of the information, 6A specifically references section 793C that focuses on obtaining documents, writings and notes, etc. But as to paragraph 6B of the information, it is relevant or it is pursuant to section 793D that requires proof that this willful communication relates to the national defense, including documents up to the secret level, from persons having lawful possession of or access to such documents. So the last clause there, from persons having lawful possession of or access to such documents, is what would distinguish paragraph 6B from 6C. 6C is an offense separately punishable under section 793E, which makes it an offense to willfully communicate documents relating to the national defense from persons in unauthorized possession of such documents. So first is it's actually the offense, but in fact, based on the information charged, it's going to be a singular person who had that status. Do you understand the difference, sir?
I do.
Okay. And that is the reason why the amendment in paragraph one notes the addition of the language referring to from persons having lawful possession of, as well as persons in an unauthorized possession. With that clarification, let me then note that the elements for, well, now that we've clarified the language of this plea agreement, Mr. Assange, have you in fact had an opportunity to read and discuss the plea agreement with your attorney, Mr. Pollack, before you actually signed it?
At great length, Your Honor.
At great length. Okay. In fact, let me step back. Page 22 of the plea agreement, around lines 19 through 20, in print it says Julian Paul Assange, defendant. Is that your signature above the line, sir?
It is.
And it's dated, looks like June 24, 2024. May I ask, where were you when you signed this document? What country? What time zone?
At Stansted Airport in the United Kingdom.
In the United Kingdom. Okay. So June 24, 2024 UK would be June 25th, likely here in Saipan, tomorrow standard time, correct?
That is possible.
Oh, yes. Well, I will say the CNMI is where America's Day truly begins. So we're in the future for most other folks. So I want to note these distinctions for the record. That's not evident because it does relate in some areas that I'll be touching on, such as sufficient time to be able to review and understand this information. Going back to this plea agreement, Mr. Assange, does this plea agreement represent in its entirety any understanding that you have with the United States government?
It does.
Do you understand the terms of the plea agreement?
I do.
Has anyone made any promise or assurance that is not contained in this written plea agreement to persuade you to accept this plea agreement?
They have not.
Has anyone threatened you in any way to persuade you to accept this plea agreement?
They have not.
Now, in this case, this plea agreement was entered into pursuant to Rule 11C1C of the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure. So that is a particular term of this plea agreement. Do you understand that if I choose not to follow the terms of the plea agreement, I will have to give you the opportunity to withdraw your guilty plea, and that if you choose to not withdraw your guilty plea, then I may impose a sentence that may be more severe sentence without being bound by the plea agreement. Do you understand?
I do.
At this time, let me ask Mr. Pollack, were all formal plea offers extended by the United States government conveyed to the defendant, Mr. Assange?
They were, Your Honor.
Okay. All right. Then let's talk about this guilty plea that you are willing to proceed with this morning. Mr. Assange, has anyone attempted in any way to force you to plead guilty this morning?
They have not.
Has anyone threatened you to get you to plead guilty this morning?
They have not.
Has anyone made any promises or assurances of any kind to get you to plead guilty other than those contained in the written plea agreement?
No.
Are you here to enter a guilty plea to the charge, the sole count and the information of your own free will because you're in fact guilty of that charge?
I am.
All right, then I've already mentioned that this one charge in the information is what we call a felony offense. Mr. Assange, do you understand that the offense to which you're pleading guilty to, because it is a felony, and if I were to accept your guilty plea and adjudge you, meaning declare you to be guilty of that offense, that such adjudication may deprive you of some valuable civil rights, such as the right to vote, right to hold public office, and right to serve a jury, and the right to possess a firearm here in the United States? Do you understand that?
Yes.
And you've already indicated that you're not a citizen of the United States. Have you discussed the possible immigration consequences of your guilty plea with your attorney?
Yes.
In fact, paragraph 2 of your plea agreement does touch on the issue of the effect on your immigration status. As you understand that there is a likely consequence of a finding of guilt, do you understand that because you're in fact not a citizen of the United States, that in addition to the other penalties you are facing here in this criminal matter, a plea of guilty may subject you to the immigration consequences of deportation, exclusion, or voluntary departure, and prevent you from becoming a United States citizen. Do you understand that?
Yes.
Okay. All right, then let's talk about the possible penalties here. I've already explained this is an offense punishable by up to 10 years imprisonment. There is no mandatory minimum. Is that correct, Mr. McKenzie?
That is correct, Your Honor. Okay.
And as to the fine, it may be up to, as I stated, up to $250,000 with no mandatory minimum amount as well. There is a separate special assessment fee of $100 because it is a felony offense, and that will be due no later than at the time of sentencing. Do you understand that, Mr. Son?
I do.
And under the terms of the plea agreement, even though I've already advised you that there's a possibility under the statute for the imposition of a supervised release, that if you were in fact placed on supervised release, any violation of conditions of supervised release may result in additional prison time here. Do you understand?
Yes.
All right. In this case, too, the information doesn't mention anything about any forfeiture. There is a provision in the Espionage Act about forfeiture property. Is there any forfeiture involved in this case?
No, Your Honor.
So the government is not going to be pursuing any forfeiture. All right, so Mr. Assange, do you understand these possible consequences that I've just described to you as a matter of law for the result of any conviction that may arise from your guilty plea? Do you understand these possible consequences?
Yes.
Now, in order for me to formulate an appropriate sentence, the law requires me to consider what we call the sentencing guidelines. That's actually discussed in your written plea agreement. And that is starting at page 11, paragraph 11. So because I'm required to consider this, I need to also make sure you understand. Mr. Assange, have you and your attorney, Mr. Pollack, in fact, talked about how these advisory sentencing guidelines might apply in your case?
Yes.
And in this case, the court normally does not determine what the applicable guidelines range is for your case until after a pre-sentence report has been completed, and that you, as well as the United States government, will have an opportunity to challenge any of the reported facts and the application of the guidelines as recommended by the probation officer, and that the sentence ultimately imposed may be different from what the plea agreement says. In this instance, I understand you are, in fact, waiving your right to a pre-sentence investigation report. Is that correct?
That is correct.
In fact, the government is also joining in that waiver. Is that correct, Mr. McKenzie?
Yes, Your Honor.
And the government and the defense are prepared to provide the court with some additional facts as necessary to enable it to exercise its duty to consider not only the advisory sentence guideline, but also the 3553A factors that follows. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right.
Regarding the defendant's co-conspirator, Chelsea Manning, I've conferred with defense counsel. We stipulate to the additional facts.
Okay, I'll receive those here and now.
On or about July 30th, 2013, Chelsea Manning was found guilty of various offenses under the Uniform Code of Military Justice related to the facts of this conspiracy. On or about August 21st, 2013, Chelsea Manning was sentenced to 35 years in prison. On or about January 17th, 2007, then President Obama commuted all but 4 months of Ms. Manning's sentence, and ultimately Chelsea Manning served approximately 7 years in prison.
Can I clarify, did you say July 17, what year?
2017.
Okay. So commuted all but how many months left?
Four
months. Just make sure I understand the representation. Ms. Manning was sentenced to 35 years imprisonment, commuted. Well, how much did she actually serve in total then?
Approximately 7 years.
Approximately, okay. All right, so that will be something that I can consider. Going back to just going over the plea and the rights in regards to the advisory guideline, once we proceed to the, if I were to accept your guilty plea and it's pursuant to 11C1C, then I will proceed with a discussion under the sentencing phase as to the actual calculation based on this additional fact. That was not previously before me. I don't have it in black and white in any of the filings. You understand that, Mr. Assange?
Yes.
All right. So under the law, again, I'm focusing on the advisory guideline. Once it's calculated, then sometimes there could be an upward or downward departure, and that is the reason why a sentence might be either greater or lesser than what the advisory guidelines is under this written plea agreement. And do you further understand, Mr. Assange, that parole has been abolished such that if you are in fact sentenced to any term of imprisonment, you may not be released on parole?
I do.
Now, let me talk about the appellate rights that is covered in your plea agreement as well. Do you understand, Mr. Assange, that under some circumstances, you or even the United States government may have a right to appeal any sentence that the court imposes? Do you understand that?
Yes.
And in this instance, in regards to the waiver, for an appeal, at paragraph 18 of your plea agreement, you specifically waive your right to appeal your conviction and sentence, as well as a right to bring any post-conviction motion, including one under 28 U.S.C. section 2255, which is what we call the habeas appeal, as opposed to the direct appeal. And that waiver is so noted. However, I'm giving you notice that you would only preserve your right to appeal if it's based upon ineffective assistance of counsel, based on information that you don't know right now. And even with any due diligence, you would not know and could not have known by the time the court imposes sentence. Do you understand?
Yes.
In other words, if it exists and you're aware of it and you don't exercise it, then that's actually waived. Do you understand?
Yes.
All right. Let me turn now to your waiver of your constitutional rights. In your plea agreement, that's already covered. And that's under paragraph 4, page 3 of your plea agreement. I just want to make sure we go over it here in open court. Mr. Assange, do you understand that you do have a right to plead not guilty to the offense charged against you in the information, and by entering a plea of not guilty, you're not admitting to having committed the crime? If you don't admit to committing the crime, then you will automatically be accorded the right to a trial by jury, and that's when I would set it for trial. You understand that?
I do.
And so by entering a plea of guilty, you are in fact admitting that you committed the crime charged. Do you understand?
I do.
Now, if you in fact exercise your right to plead not guilty and the right to a trial by jury, that will be the only time that we would summon the jurors over to the jury box over here to my left, as well as force the government, because the government's burden of proof, to produce witnesses, to present facts and evidence to the jury, and that it will be the only time you will be able to see those witnesses and have them cross-examine in your own defense. And then after the government is done presenting their evidence at that trial, you would have the right, even though you don't have the duty to do so, you have a right to summon your own witnesses by using the court's subpoena power to summon any individuals to trial, and that will be the time that not only you through your attorney would be able to ask those witnesses questions, but even the government would have a right to cross-examine. Do you understand that?
I do.
You also have a right to be presumed innocent. In fact, right now as you sit there, you are presumed innocent of the charge. And it is the government that would have to prove the charge against you beyond a reasonable doubt, which is the highest burden in our criminal justice system. Do you understand that?
I do.
By entering a guilty plea this morning, you will be waiving these rights, including the right to remain silent, because obviously, in order for me to establish the guilt, it will not be by that trial, but through your guilty plea. Do you understand?
Yes.
And do you understand that if the matter, in fact, went to trial, and should you decide not to testify or even put on any evidence, then these facts cannot be used against you by the attorneys for the government or even the jurors?
Yes.
Do you understand that? Okay. So do you further understand by entering a plea of guilty this morning, and if I were to accept your guilty plea, there will be no trial of any kind, and you will have waived or given up all those rights and, to a trial that I've just described to you?
Yes. Okay.
Let's talk about the nature of the charge here. I've already pointed to the information. It's a very short information as to the essential elements of this one count. It is one count of conspiracy with three different legal theories. And in your plea agreement, that is covered. And I know I had asked the party to make sure that we use the Ninth Circuit's instruction. But for purposes of the elements, it is what the government must prove if this particular charge was in fact made against any individual. And so the elements for this conspiracy charge requires the government to prove, actually in the jury instruction, is some beginning or end date to give everyone some time frame, that there was an agreement between two or more persons to commit at least one crime as charged in the information, and that you as a defendant became a member of this conspiracy knowing of at least one of its objects and intending to help accomplish it. In fact, the elements are stated in paragraph number 8, page 4 of your plea agreement, and in fact it specifically notes that for purposes of your case, the government was prepared to establish that for this conspiracy, there was an agreement or understanding that was formed, reached, or entered into by at least by two or more persons to violate Title 18 of the United States Code, Section 793, subparts C through E. So that's C, D, and E. And second, at some time during the existence of, or life of the conspiracy, agreement, or understanding, that you, Mr. Assange, knew the purpose of the agreement and with the knowledge then deliberately joined the conspiracy, agreement, or understanding. And third, that at some time during the existence or life of the conspiracy, agreement, or understanding, one of the alleged members knowingly performed an overt act as charged in the information and did so in order to further or advance the purpose of the agreement. In this case, your plea agreement specifically notes that you agree with the United States that the objects of the conspiracy were to, one, obtain documents connected with the national defense for the purpose of obtaining information respecting the national defense, and two, you willfully communicate documents relating to the national defense, including for which the communication did not have authorized possession to a person not entitled to receive them. So those are particular agreements of the object for purposes of the elements. We've already touched earlier about the additional and distinction for the additional type of person or status of the person. But for purposes of the elements, those are at least the minimum that you can agree to for the object. The factual basis would be different. But this is to explain to you what the government would be required to prove if the matter, in fact, went to trial. Do you understand that, Mr. Assange?
I do.
At this time, I'm asking you to explain to me, what is it that you did that will constitute the crime charge?
Working as a journalist, I encouraged my source to provide information that was said to be classified in order to publish that information. I believe that the First Amendment protected that activity, but I accept that as written, it's a violation of the Espionage Act statute.
So you had certain belief, but you understand what the law actually says as well.
I believe the First Amendment and the Espionage Act are in contradiction with each other, but I accept that that it would be difficult to win such a case in given all the circumstances.
There is a difference between what we call a nolo contendere plea, when you actually recognize all the evidence, and if it was in fact presented to a jury, the jury would in fact render a guilty verdict versus a personal acknowledgement of it. Mr. Pollack, I hope you touched that issue and distinction with your client.
Yes, Your Honor, this is not a nolo contendere or an offered plea. Mr. Assange believes that the conduct at issue should be protected by the First Amendment, but understands that no court has held that there is a First Amendment defense to the Espionage Act. He understands that his conduct violates the terms of the Espionage Act and is pleading guilty on that basis.
All right. Let me hear from Mr. Assange. Is this, in fact, your understanding?
That's correct.
Okay. You already acknowledged that the information that you solicited from your sources were classified. For purposes of the information, there's a definition of classified that has a three-tier, and I believe, well, because in due course I will have to get into the advisory guidelines analysis, and the level of classified information is actually relevant, whether it's top secret, secret, or confidential. And so you mentioned that there were classified, and the information charges you with information that you in fact received as being secret. Is this the level of classified information that you understand you received?
Yes.
At a minimum, okay. Because that's what's charged. All right. In this case, having heard from the defendant, I still need to have an independent basis in fact to find the defendant guilty. For that reason, I'm now turned to the government. Mr. McKenzie, if the matter in fact went to trial, what would the government be prepared to prove?
Your Honor, the United States and the defendant stipulate and agree.
I'm sorry, Mr. McKenzie, before you continue. Mr. Assange, I always ask every defendant, please listen to what the government is representing they're prepared to prove. If there's something that you know personally to be incorrect, I want you to take note and let me know. If it's something you're not aware of that you don't know if it's true or not, then obviously that's something the government is just proffering that they can't prove through other sources. Do you understand, sir?
I do.
All right. Mr. McKenzie, back to you.
All right. Your Honor, I'm just going to read from the plea agreement at paragraph 9.
All right.
The United States and the defendant stipulate and agree that the following facts are accurate, that the United States could prove these facts beyond a reasonable doubt at trial, and that these facts constitute an adequate factual basis for the defendant's guilty plea. The defendant was born on July 3, 1971, and is a citizen of Australia. Between in or about 2009 and continuing until in or about at least 2011, outside the jurisdiction of any particular state or district in the United States, the defendant, Julian Paul Assange, who was not a citizen of the United States, and who did not have authorization to possess, access, or control documents, writings, or notes related to the relating to the national defense, including classified information, knowingly and unlawfully conspired with former U.S. Army intelligence analyst Chelsea Manning, who held a top-secret U.S. security clearance, to willfully and unlawfully obtain, deliver, transmit, and communicate documents, writings, and notes relating to the national defense, including classified information, to persons not entitled to receive such items and information, including the defendant himself. The defendant maintained and controlled a public website, WikiLeaks, for which for a period of time described itself as the first intelligence agency of the people. From at least 2009 and continuing through at least 2010, the defendant publicly solicited information from people who had then current or prior access to classified information to provide that information to the defendant. The defendant's website, WikiLeaks, stated, quote, WikiLeaks accepts classified, censored, or otherwise restricted material of political, diplomatic, or ethical significance, end quote, and also publicly hosted a, quote, draft, colon, most wanted leaks, end quote, list. As of November 2009, WikiLeaks public draft most wanted leaks list for the United States included, first, bulk databases, including an encyclopedia used by the United States intelligence community called Intellipedia, and the unclassified but non-public Central Intelligence Agency, or CIA, Open Source Center database, and second, military and intelligence documents, including documents that WikiLeaks described as classified up to the secret level, for example, Iraq and Afghanistan Rules of Engagement 2000 to 2009, parentheses, secret, operating and interrogation procedures at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, documents relating to Guantanamo detainees, CIA detainee interrogation videos, and information about certain weapon systems. The defendant also publicly encouraged people to obtain the information he desired and to send that information to the defendant at WikiLeaks. The defendant also said that unless they were, quote, a serving member of the United States military, unquote, those providing classified information would have no legal liability for giving such classified information to him because, quote, top secret, unquote, meant nothing as a matter of law. Under Executive Order 13526, information in any form may be classified if it, one, is owned by, produced by, or for, or is under the control of the U.S. government, two, falls within one or more of the categories set forth in the executive order, namely top secret, secret, and confidential, and three, is classified by an original classification authority who determines that its unauthorized disclosure reasonably could be expected to result in damage to the national security of the United States. Information is classified as secret if the unauthorized disclosure of that information reasonably could be expected to cause serious damage to the national security of the United States. Pursuant to Executive Order 13526, information classified at any level can be lawfully accessed only by persons determined by an appropriate U.S. government official to be eligible for access to classified information, who have signed an appropriate non-disclosure agreement, received a security clearance, and have a need to know the classified information. From 2009 to 2010, Manning was a U.S. Army intelligence analyst deployed to Forward Operating Base Hammer in Iraq. Manning held a top secret U.S. security clearance and had executed a classified information non-disclosure agreement, which acknowledged, among other things, that the unauthorized disclosure of classified information could cause damage or irreparable injury to the United States, and that Manning would not divulge classified information without prior authorization from the relevant government agency. Between January 2010 and May 2010, Manning used U.S. government computer systems to download hundreds of thousands of documents and reports, many of them classified at the secret level and relating to the national defense. In doing so, Manning downloaded four nearly complete databases from departments and agencies of the United States that contained, among other things, approximately 90,000 Afghanistan war-related significant activity reports, 400,000 Iraq war-related significant activity reports, 800 Joint Task Force Guantanamo, or JTF, GTMO, detainee assessment briefs, and 250,000 U.S. State Department cables. During this time period, Manning also downloaded multiple classified files relating to the U.S. military's Rules of Engagement, or ROE, in Iraq from the U.S. government's secure communication network called the Secret Internet Protocol Router Network, or CIPRNet. After downloading digital reams of classified documents and files, Manning, without authorization, electronically sent them to the defendant, understanding that at least some of them would be publicly posted on WikiLeaks' website. Many of the documents and files that Manning downloaded and sent to the defendant contained information that was classified up to the secret level. During the time period surrounding Manning's passage of classified materials to WikiLeaks, Manning and the defendant communicated via online platforms about Manning's progress. On March 7th, 2010, Manning asked the defendant how valuable the JTF GTMO detainee assessment briefs were. The defendant suggested that they were likely of interest, and on March 8th, 2010, Manning told the defendant that Manning was, quote, throwing everything, in brackets, Manning had, on JTF GTMO at the defendant now. All right, that was in brackets. The defendant responded, okay, great. Later, on March 8th, 2010, Manning used a secure file transfer protocol connection to transmit the JTF GTMO detainee assessment briefs, classified secret and containing national defense information, to a cloud Dropbox operated by WikiLeaks with the directory that the defendant has had designated for Manning's use. After sending the classified JTF GTMO detainee assessment briefs to the defendant, Manning told the defendant, quote, that's all I really have got left, end quote, to encourage Manning to continue to provide the United States classified documents that Manning had obtained without authorization and for which Manning did not have authorization to transmit to the defendant in WikiLeaks. The defendant replied, quote, curious eyes never run dry in my experience, end quote. On March 10th, 2010, in response to Manning's earlier question about whether there was, quote, anything useful, end quote, in the, quote, Gitmo docs, end quote, the defendant responded in part that, quote, these sorts of things are always motivating to other sources too, end quote. The defendant continued, quote, hence the feeling is people can give us stuff for anything not as dangerous as Gitmo on the one hand, and on the other, for people who know more, there's a desire to eclipse, end quote. In early 2010, in furtherance of the conspiracy, Manning again used her access to CIPRNet to download the U.S. military's classified ROE in Iraq and, without authorization, send them to the defendant with the understanding that WikiLeaks may publicly disclose them. The Iraq ROE detailed the circumstances and limitations under which U.S. military forces in Iraq would initiate or continue combat operations, and portions of the Iraq ROE constitute United States national defense information, the disclosure of which could be used to the injury of the United States or the advantage of a foreign nation. Between March 28, 2010 and April 9, 2010, in furtherance of the conspiracy, Manning further accessed a U.S. government database and downloaded over 250,000 U.S. State Department cables, which were classified up to the secret level. Manning then, without authorization, uploaded these cables to the defendant through a secure file transfer protocol connection to a WikiLeaks cloud Dropbox with a specific directory designated for Manning's use. By at least March 8, 2010, the defendant knew that Manning was taking classified documents and material from U.S. government sources and, without authorization, offering to provide those materials to the defendant with the understanding that at least some of them would be further disseminated publicly. The defendant also knew that many of the classified materials that Manning was sending to the defendant were classified up to the secret level. With this knowledge, the defendant began publicly disclosing classified material on the internet in April 2010. On April 5th, 2010, the defendant, through his website, released four Iraq ROE files that Manning had previously downloaded and, without authorization, sent to the defendant. WikiLeaks titled the four documents, quote, U.S. Rules of Engagement for Iraq, semicolon, 2007 flowchart, end quote. Quote, U.S. Rules of Engagement for Iraq, semicolon, ref card 2007, end quote. Quote, U.S. Rules of Engagement for Iraq, comma, March 2007, end quote. And, quote, U.S. Rules of Engagement for Iraq, comma, November 2006, end quote. While the U.S. Rules of Engagement, excuse me, while the, quote, U.S. Rules of Engagement for Iraq, semicolon, ref card 2007, end quote, document wasn't classified, the other three documents were classified secret. In or about 2010 and 2011, the defendant publicly disclosed via WikiLeaks website hundreds of thousands of documents that Manning had previously taken without authorization and given to him, including approximately 75,000 Afghanistan war-related significant activity reports classified up to the secret level, 400,000 Iraq war-related significant activity reports classified up to the secret level, 800 JTF GTMO detainee assessment briefs classified up to the secret level, and over 100,000 U.S. State Department cables, some of which were classified up to the secret level. Some of these raw classified documents were publicly disclosed without removing or redacting all the personally identifiable information relating to certain individuals who shared sensitive information about their own governments and activities in their countries with the U.S. government in confidence. In an August 2010 panel discussion, the defendant said it was, quote, regrettable, unquote, that individuals exposed through his website as having previously met with the United States government, quote, may face some threat as a result, end quote. In the same panel discussion, the defendant stated that, quote, we, meaning WikiLeaks, are not obligated to protect other people's sources, military sources or spy organization sources, except from unjust retribution, unquote. Adding that, in general, quote, there are numerous cases where people sell information or frame others who are engaged in genuinely traitorous behavior, and actually that is something for the public to know about, end quote. The actions of the defendant, as recounted above, were in all respects knowing and deliberate and were not committed by mistake, accident, or other innocent reason. This statement of facts is made for the limited purpose of supporting the defendant's guilty plea. It therefore does not contain all facts relating to the underlying criminal conduct. This statement of facts does not preclude either party from presenting and arguing for sentencing purposes additional facts which are relevant for the guideline computation or sentences unless otherwise prohibited by this agreement. Your Honor, that concludes the statement of facts. Before I yield the floor back, I just want to note, while the government does not dispute Mr. Assange's characterization of him, of his own belief of what he was doing or what the belief, his belief, the First Amendment ought to be, the statement of facts contained in this agreement are what the United States is relying on. And I didn't want our silence to those points to somehow suggest that we agree with the defendant. We reject those contentions, although accept that he believes them. And with that, I'll sit down. Thank you.
Understood, Mr. McKenzie. And thank you for stating the facts as recited in the plea agreement. Mr. Assange, I'd asked you to listen carefully and to, at this point, let me know if there's anything that was represented by the government through Mr. McKenzie's reading of the facts to be incorrect to your personal knowledge.
No, Your Honor.
All right, then. In this case, the plea agreement does contemplate the dismissal of other charges that are not pending in this district, but in another district, which I do not have jurisdiction over. And so for purposes of your guilty plea, to the extent that I can deliver on what is presented in the plea agreement, I'm just giving you notice, Mr. Assange, pursuant to your plea agreement, that if I were to, in fact, allow you to enter a guilty plea and I accepted, the dismissal of the other charge will not be handled here personally. But, Mr. McKenzie, on behalf of the government, pursuant to the plea agreement, is it your intention to, in fact, perform after sentence is pronounced?
Yes, Your Honor. Once sentence is pronounced, the United States will move to dismiss the indictment in the Eastern District of Virginia. At this exact moment in time, that courthouse is closed given the time difference, but I think it will still be calendar day today that the case is removed to dismiss in Virginia.
Well, so long as the action is performed within a reasonable time, meaning the filing, because the mere filing would trigger the notice of electronic filing, and Mr. Pollack, you are a named counsel in that matter, so you should be able to receive the electronic filing so that you can get a confirmation that the government is performed. It's just a matter of the court taking action thereafter.
That's correct, Your Honor. The government has represented, and it is part of the plea agreement, that it will dismiss all charges of the Eastern District of Virginia, and I will receive electronic notification as soon as that has occurred.
All right. Mr. Assange, having advised you of your rights, are you in fact prepared to waive all your rights, including the constitutional rights that I've notified to you? And in fact, there are more rights that I did not touch on. And so let me go through those with you to make sure these waivers for rights that I don't normally see in my plea agreements are in fact something you are aware of and that you are normally intelligently and voluntarily waiving. And again, this is because the sole count in the information is to a violation of Section 793G, which is a conspiracy charge. If two or more persons conspire to violate any of the foregoing provisions of Section 793, and one or more persons, and one or more of such persons do any act to affect the object of the conspiracy, then each of the parties to such conspiracy will be subject to the punishment provided in this section. So turning to those waivers, let me start with the waiver of discovery, paragraph 5. Don't usually see that, but I know in this proceedings, this is very significant. A defendant can waive his right to discovery in a plea agreement. And the court notes that the United States Constitution does not require the government to disclose material evidence prior to entering a plea agreement with the defendant. But in any event, the right is yours and it can be waived. But if you so waive, then all of or any right to pursue any discovery from the United States government as part of this case will be foreclosed. Do you understand that?
I do.
The other waiver we already talked about, which is the waiver of the venue. As to the statute of limitations, that is expressly covered in paragraph 7 of your plea agreement. The statute of limitation is an affirmative defense that can be waived. Are you, in fact, waiving the statute of limitations? And in particular, this is in the information for purposes of what you're pleading guilty to. Because there are, again, charges pending in Virginia, and this plea agreement is only focusing on this information. Do you understand that, sir?
I do.
And do you so waive the statute of limitation for this charge? Okay. And as to the PSR that was previously referenced, just for the record again, the pre-sentence investigation report is something that I can allow for parties, because sometimes even with parties willing to object, the court can overrule that. But if I can find, as the court, that the information in the record enables me to meaningfully exercise my sentencing authority under 3553A, then I can enter that finding on the record. So we still have a probation officer. I know there was a bail report prepared yesterday, and I haven't noted it for the record here because we're not talking about release issues. But was there any, well, first of all, let me add a confirmation. I'm sure the defendants know the contents because they were a participant in providing the information, but did the government receive a copy of that bail report? Apparently they haven't received, oh, so maybe you just received it and you haven't reviewed it. So Mr. McKenzie and Mr.
We are in receipt, Your Honor. I'm flipping through it right now.
Okay, so why don't you go ahead and review that. To the extent that there may be any additional information for this report, Officer David Atalik, is there any additional information?
None, Your Honor.
Okay. So I'll allow you, Mr. McKenzie, to read it through. In fact, we're almost at the closure of the change of plea phase, so once we do this, I plan on taking a recess. It'll be about a 15-minute recess, and then we'll proceed to the final stage. Okay, so you have some time, Mr. McKenzie, to review that bail report. So again, for the record, Mr. Assange, you are in fact waiving the right to a PSR, is that correct? Or pre-sentence investigation report?
Yes, sure. Okay.
There's also a waiver pursuant to paragraph 15, in particular, paragraph B3, as well as 21. This is on the issue of Rule 410 of the Federal Rules of Evidence. It's very particular because absent some affirmative indication that this agreement was entered into unknowingly or involuntarily, an agreement to waive the exclusion or provisions of the plea agreement rules is valid and enforceable. So I need to make sure that you are very much aware and that you are knowingly and voluntarily waiving this issue regarding the exclusionary rule. Again, it's at paragraph 15B, referencing Rule 410. And I guess it's a lengthy document, so 15B is at page... Paragraph 15 starts at page 16, but as to B3, or 3Is, it's actually at page 18 regarding any prosecution.
Yes, Your Honor, to be clear, that waiver would only apply if there were a breach of the plea agreement by Mr. Assange.
Yes, if, and that's under paragraph B. So it's a conditional if. That all of that would be waived, again, in the event that an issue arises that triggers this provision of paragraph 15D. That is when the government would want this to be used, and that's why you need to make sure it's waived today before a situation arises. If it never arises, obviously no, neither side would have to worry about it. But it's correct. Looking at paragraph 15A, it talks about what may occur when the United States is the one that is in breach, but as for paragraph 15B, it's when the defendant breaches. So, yes, you're correct, Mr. Pollack. So to the extent that there's any waiver, it's only if there's a breach and the government tries to use it against you. Today's the day to recognize that that waiver will occur today, and you can't raise it later on. You understand that, Mr. Assange?
I do.
Okay. As to paragraph 19, this is a waiver of the Freedom of Information Act provision. This is very particular for this plea agreement. It is a clear waiver by the defendant to assert either directly or indirectly through a representative to obtain any of the records pertaining to the U.S. Department of Justice criminal investigation, extradition, and or prosecution of yourself, including without limitation any records that may be sought pursuant to the Freedom of Information Act of at Title V. Do you understand and do you in fact waive this FOIA right?
I do.
Okay. And then we have the Hyde Amendment and additional waivers. So this is in relation to any possible attorney's fees and other litigation expenses out of the investigation or prosecution of this matter, because the Hyde Amendment allows an award of attorney's fees and costs against the United States only when its overall litigation position was vexatious, frivolous, or in bad faith. And so there's no allegation of it existing, but to the extent that there may be a basis for a subsequent claim, this plea agreement indicates that you are, in fact, knowingly waiving this possible claim. Do you understand that?
I do.
And you so agree?
I do.
Okay. All right, so those are the crux of the plea agreement. Was there any particular one that I may have omitted, Mr. McKenzie, that you felt needed to be confirmed on the record?
No, Your Honor.
And to the extent that there's anything that would bind the government, is there anything that the defense wants me to confirm that the government will, in fact, honor? I've already been honoring or recognizing their duty for dismissal at the appropriate time. Is there anything else?
Your Honor, the plea agreement has several provisions regarding the United States' obligation, but I'm confident the United States is aware of them, and I don't think we need to go over them the same way we would where the defendant is waiving something.
Understood. All right. So at this time, again, Mr. Assange, I've gone through the charge that's pending against you, the potential liability, including imprisonment and fine and civil forfeiture of rights and immigration issues. At this time, do you in fact wish to waive those rights that I've just advised you of and enter a plea of guilty to the sole charge in the information?
I do.
At this time, I'm going to ask you to please rise.
Your Honor, if I could confer with government counsel for one moment.
Yes. Mr. Pollack, is there anything that we need to address on the record, or do we need to take a recess for you to delve into it?
No need for a recess. There is just one additional clarification that the government and I had discussed previously, but apparently the edit did not make it into the final draft, but I've conferred with the government. If the court can look at the section we just referenced regarding the defendant's breach, it's 15B and appears on page 17.
Yes, I have page 17 in front of me.
In that first paragraph, it has a series of clauses, all of which are intended to be things that if the defendant intentionally did would cause a breach, such as if the defendant intentionally did something that would cause the court not to accept the C plea, violated federal or state or local laws prior to sentencing, intentionally gave false, incomplete or misleading information, or intentionally caused the court to reject the plea agreement, or the last one is otherwise violates any provision of this agreement. The word intentionally was intended to apply to both clauses. Intentionally causes the court to reject the plea agreement or otherwise intentionally violates any provision of the agreement. But because there's an ambiguity as to whether the word intentionally only modifies the first clause or modifies both, we were going to insert the word intentionally again between otherwise and violates in that last line. So it would read, intentionally causes the court to reject a plea agreement or otherwise intentionally violates any provision of this agreement. I've conferred with the government. The government has confirmed that that is the intent. So I can either make that handwritten change or we can initial it or we could replace this page, whatever the court's preference is.
Mr. McKenzie, you agree to the insertion of the word intentionally at the appropriate position that was just described by Mr. Pollack?
I do, Your Honor, and I apologize in the back and forth with counsel that got missed. I would propose, I don't think it's going to change the pagination of anything, but I would propose a replacement page, which we could initial, just to clarify that we did that. And also, since we're talking about recent changes, I have a replacement page 2 that I read into the record earlier that I'm providing counsel so he has a copy of it as well. And I can take care of the change to page 17 during the break here.
And do you have an extra copy of that page 2? What I can do is if you tender it to the clerk, it'll be scanned. They'll be able to, I guess maybe in due course, do you want to insert the word amended for separate documentation? I know the clerks are able to substitute out a page or two, but if there's anything substituted from what's already been broadcast, published, then it needs to be initialed so we know what's different. I think at a minimum, I need that page 2 for the clerk's office as well, just for the record here.
Yes, Your Honor, we'll take care of that. Thank you.
Okay. So without objection, then, we will, in fact, modify the written plea agreement to insert the word intentionally at page 17, the current page 17. And this is paragraph 15B, as in boy. And shall we say the last clause where it currently says, or in any way intentionally causes the court to reject the plea agreement or otherwise violates, the word intentionally will precede the word violates. Is that the intention, Mr. Pollack?
That's it. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. So that is so noted for the record. Once we have the written form initial, I think it's just one word. That's fine if it's, I've got the original here, so we can have it initialed and clarified for the record. Okay. So going back, gone through the rights and the terms and the waivers, going back to Mr. Assange. Mr. Assange, at this time, do you in fact wish to waive all the rights that I've advised you of and enter a plea of guilty to the sole count in the information?
I do.
If so, I'm going to ask you to please rise as I will ask for your plea. Mr. Julian Paul Assange, as to the sole count in the information in this case, which is the offense of the conspiracy to obtain and disclose national defense information, which is in violation of Title 18 of the United States Code, Section 793G, and this is as to the violation of subsection 793D. As in violation of C as in Charlie, D as in doctor, and E as in elephant. How do you now plead? Guilty or not guilty?
Guilty to the information.
Guilty to the sole count of the information?
Yes.
So noted. All right, Mr. Assange, please be seated. At this time, it is the finding of this court that in the case of United States of America versus Julian Paul Assange, that the defendant, Mr. Assange, is in fact fully competent and capable of entering an informed plea, and that the defendant is aware of the nature of the charge and the consequences of his guilty plea, and that the plea of guilty is a knowing and voluntary plea supported by an independent basis in fact containing each of the essential elements of the offense. The plea of guilty is therefore accepted, and the defendant is now adjudged guilty of that offense. Mr. Assange, having found you guilty, I would ordinarily order that a written pre-sentence report be prepared by the probation officer. You've already indicated that there's a waiver. And so the government has just confirmed, having received the bail report, and I had the supplemental statement on the record. To the extent you were reading from what you were proposing, can you tender that to the clerk so that I have something in black and white to say that I'm referring to that? Because that should, while we're at it, I think it needs to be a part of this record that speaks for itself. I don't want someone with the recordings. Mr. Anderson, do you have a copy
of
that?
Regarding page 2.
This is that we're talking about the additional stipulation of fact for the 3553A factors regarding Ms. Manning.
Oh,
That's a short
They're just my handwritten, notes.
I don't want the handwritten notes. Can you have someone type it up? We're going to take a recess.
Yes.
Because it should be something that I can even have the clerk hold as a part of the exhibit for this proceedings, but I don't want it to be just an oral statement. Okay?
Yes. We will formalize this in the break and
okay.
Provide it. Thank you.
So I think this will be an appropriate time to take our break. I see it's 10:47. Shall we take at least a 20-minute break? We've got quite a bit of people. There's only a limited amount of restroom space. We can resume. We'll be back at 11:10 a.m., all right? So even though the defendant's been found guilty and adjudged, we obviously are still in release pending this final resolution. So we'll resume at 11:10.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.